I am Planta on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The discussion over Canada's healthcare system continues as a new book looks at the necessary reforms to not only be feasible today but in the future, and if the necessary prescriptions aren't taken, what will become of the health of Canadians? Stephen Skivington joins me now. He has written a new book, This May Hurt a Bit, Reinventing Canada's Healthcare System. The book looks at what universality really means, just how portable the system is for a Canadian who moves from one province to another, what interest groups and organizations are preventing not only reform but any serious discussion. I'll also ask Mr. Skivington about whether the future of healthcare will be an issue in this fall federal election campaign. Stephen Skivington is a regular commentator on healthcare policy and the founder and president of the public relations firm Polytrain. He joined me from Cobourg, Ontario last week. This book is published by Dundurn. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Stephen Skivington. Mr. Skivington, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Very good.
I guess a good place to start is to look at these things that we hold near and dear in this country, like the Canada Health Act. And I suppose a good question is what it is not, because I think a lot of people hold this one act up as, say, the what needs to be protected, what needs to be saved. But, I mean, you've had a look at the thing, and there's a lot that it's not, right?
Well, yeah, I've been doing this for 25 years, and, people ask me, was there anything while you're writing the book that surprised you? And quite a lot in the Canada Health Act actually surprised me. I was surprised to learn, for example, that it's a finance bill. It's a bill that was designed to put an end to extra billing and co-payments, all that kind of stuff. I had, like everyone else, with all the propaganda about how we must wrap ourselves in the flag of the Canada Health Act or you're not a Canadian, if you dare suggest, that maybe it's time to update it or get rid of it or come up with something else. And, the other thing that was quite fascinating, too, is when Judge Emmett Hall did his review in 79,
uh-huh.
he, of course, being the one who in the early 60s brought forward the Medical Health Act that gave us modern Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
When he looked at this, and as we know, there are five principles, there were actually, he looked at Tommy Douglas's eight principles. Tommy Douglas had eight principles, including the five that are in there now. But Tommy Douglas had included effective, efficient, and responsible. And, of course, responsible meant we, the patients, the people of Canada, are also responsible for the costs. It's not just everything's free.
Mm-hmm.
And so, a lot of this is quite eye-opening to even someone who's been doing this for many years. And, it's fascinating when you look at all of the things that went towards making this bill that came out on April Fool's Day, 1984, 35
right.
years ago.
Uh-huh.
It's not quite what we think it is, or have been told it is.
Yeah, and so there is a difference between, say, privatization and the privatizing of the delivery of healthcare services.
Yeah,
I think that's a distinction that people need to know about. Especially since what you talk about in the book, it may sound radical to some people, but it really isn't, is it?
No. One of the great canards is that people like Dr. Brian Day and myself are trying to replace our Canadian public Medicare system with a private system. Or the other favorite is we're trying to bring the American system to Canada.
Right.
Neither of those two things are true. And, the other thing people will say is, you just want to create a second tier for the rich. Well, first of all, the rich don't need a second tier. They already have it. It's called America. They just get on a plane and go down there.
Mm-hmm.
But, two tiers would actually be a vast improvement because by last count, I think we're somewhere between 10 and 15 tiers. And, it's quite ridiculous that, amongst other things, Canadian prisoners have better access to health care than the rest of us. That's just one of those extra tiers. We're talking workers' compensation tier, RCMP tier, the hockey player tier. There's no end to how many tiers we have. But, I'm not interested in replacing first of all, I'm not interested in replacing Canada's system, which is ranked number 30th, I believe, amongst the OECD countries, with the U.S. system, which is number 36.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not interested in getting rid of the public system and replacing with a private. What we're suggesting, people like Dr. Day and I, is we need a hybrid system, a system that is a mix of public and private, kind of what I call a parallel system, and that, you know, works together, works in harmony like pretty much every other country except for our crazy country.
Yeah, and so you mentioned Dr. Brian Day, who's works out of Vancouver here. He wrote the foreword to your book, and he is at the fore of a case. I guess it's still ongoing, isn't it?
Oh, it's an ever-ending charter challenge. Yeah, I think it's been going since about 2010.
Yeah.
And after he wins in B.C., it'll go to the Supreme Court, and after he wins there, the Supreme Court of Canada will finally be able to do this Canada-wide. Yeah.
Well, why are some Canadians, so reticent about doing anything different? Because, I mean, there are people who will listen to you, and you mean you're not suggesting replacing the system, you're suggesting improving it. But some people will say, you know, Skivington, you know, why mess around with it at all? It's fine. We just need more money.
Well, first of all, we've been throwing more money at it for years. If you remember 10, 15 years ago, Paul Martin's fix for a generation, I guess that was 2004, which lasted 10 years and fixed nothing. It's not a question of throwing more money at it. It's a question of thinking outside the box, being creative. You know, people keep asking me, okay, so whose system should we imitate? Well, we shouldn't imitate anybody's system. I think we've got some great brains here in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I'd much rather see us create our own system. In fact, I'm really excited about this because, as you'll know, in the book, Section 4 is called The Big Fix, in which I make 10 suggestions of what I would do.
Yeah.
But I'm going down to Concordia University in Montreal. It's actually anybody can sign up for this one-day course, in which we're going to do a workshop in which the students, who are of all kinds of ages, are going to try to figure out how would you introduce medical tourism? How would you combine all 14 of Canada's health ministries into one super ministry at the federal level? How would you bring about a hybrid healthcare system and let it operate above board in Canada? So that's what I think we really need, is to put the great brains in this country to work, not simply imitate what somebody else has done. We can certainly look at and learn from other countries, but I would really want to create something right here, and that's one of the reasons why I'm hoping to find some supporters, backers, people that want to get on board, whether financially or otherwise, with something I'm calling the Institute of Healthcare Reform and Innovation, in which we're going to hopefully create a virtual institute, whether it's a brick-and-mortar place at some point, we'll see. But I very much want to continue this work throughout the entire year, because my goal here is to make healthcare the number one election issue in the October 2019 election, because our politicians are great at running away from this issue and never talking about it. And then we'll see whether I can make it the number one issue in the States next year as they ramp up into their November 2020 election. We've, of course, seen Bernie Sanders and Dr. Daniel Martin from Canada talk about the Medicare for All Act and so on and so forth. Look at kind of creating something down there based on our system, which I say is a bad idea. So, you know, I'm very much about being innovative. I'm very much, you know, the subtitle of the book is Reinventing Canada's Healthcare System. And I think that's very important that we keep in mind that what we're really doing here is reinventing the wheel.
Mm.
And I think it's high time to do that, because really, this whole process started about 70 years ago. And I mentioned the Canada Health Act was 35 years old, but of course the introduction of Medicare by Justice Hall and his committee, that was 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's high time that we take a look at this and take some serious some serious effort into reinventing what we've got here, because it's clearly not working.
Who are some of the people, maybe not specific people, but some of the groups, for example, that prevent us from even having a serious discussion about all of this? I mean, there's a lot of self-interest, as I'm reading your book, that I see.
Oh, sure. It's people like Dr. Daniel Martin and the Canadian Doctors for Medicare and the all the different health coalitions you see across the country. Often our NDP groups, our union-backed groups, nobody's paying me to say this. No, I got no funding. I don't have private health clinics lining my pockets. But we saw the Unifor Canada's biggest union gave $50,000 to Dr. Martin and her gang, the Canadian Doctors for Medicare, so they could pay lawyers to have intervener status in the Dr. Day Charter Challenge. But also, and this is what I think is disgraceful, by the way, so in Dr. Day's case, he raised about $2 million mm-hmm. out of his own pocket and through donations from ordinary Canadians. The government of B.C. spent $20 million taxpayer dollars in the first 6 months of that charter challenge. I believe the number is now up to $30 million, and they wanted to pass a piece of legislation so nobody could know how much they'd spent on this. Well, hey, I think it's disgraceful that they're spending our own money to keep us sick and dying on wait lists. But then to try and cover it up and be secretive about it really tells you what this is all about. And I think, bottom line, to answer your question, it comes down to there's a fear of competition. Mm-hmm. Because if you open the door to private care, if you open the door to private clinics, medical tourism, which I go into a great deal, and I know BC a couple of health ministers back was trying to do this and then mm-hmm. shot down. But I say, why should our health care system be a cost center? Why can't it be a revenue generator? Mm-hmm. This, again, is the kind of outside-of-the-box thinking that I'm saying we need in order to, embrace the 21st century, which we find ourselves in right now.
You write in the book that the status quo is untenable, and I'm wondering, as I'm reading the book, why it turned out this way. Is it because of the growth in the population? I mean, and I guess another question that I had was, did the framers of universal health care, could they have foreseen what would happen, say, now?
Well, okay, here's what I suggest happened, is they solved the wrong problem. And I often say that this is what happens, is they solve the political problem instead of the real problem. And that's why I employ Dr. Mindassiter's simplexity techniques in this book, where you'll see in the Big Fix section I talk about how might we, why would we want to, what's stopping us from. So in the case of Justice Emmett Hall and his Royal Commission back in the 60s, they figured out how to keep Canadians from going bankrupt, instead of figuring out how to create a healthcare system. Mm. And so we ended up with two things. A, we ended up with a sickness system, not a healthcare system. But even worse, we ended up with an insurance scheme, which I refer to as a badly run insurance scheme. Mm-hmm. So our problem is that we're continuing to not focus on the actual real problems. What Dr. Bassiter talks about is that, you know, we end up often going down the wrong road dealing with, you know, a fuzzy situation that seems like the problem, but is really just a collection of, you know, facts. And so when you look in great detail, as I do in the book, at all the hearings that Justice Hall held looking into it, and even then, as years later when they brought in the Canada Health Act, which is kind of an update of it, they made the same kind of mistakes. And so the problem is that not only have we focused on the wrong problem, but there's a series of, I like to refer to it as we have an accounting problem. Mm. But not only are we facing three healthcare tsunamis, dementia, diabetes, and obesity, that are by themselves going to be enough to wipe us right out, then we have the idiocy of, let's bring in universal pharmacare, which I'm very much against. That will pretty much finish the job of bankrupting the country. And, of course, there's Dalton McGuinty, the former Premier of Ontario's famous line, there'll come a day when we only have enough money for the ministry. And it still won't be enough money for the to pay the what's going on with the Ministry of Health. Yeah. So my thought is this: we have a major accounting problem, and if you want to assure that we end up with a U.S. style two-tier system, continue to do what you're doing, maintain the status quo, pretend it's sustainable, prop up what we're doing, and we'll end up in a situation where every road is going to have to be a toll road. Every school is going to have to be a private school. There'll be no money for infrastructure or roads or anything, or government services, because the whole 100% of your budget will be going to pay for health care. And that's the real problem that we're facing right now. And I go into it in some detail. You know, the young people, the millennials, the iGens, figure, I don't have to worry about health care. I'm healthy. I got no problems. Well, you know, feast your eyes on this one. boomers like me, baby boomers like me, I just turned 60, will use $4,000 more health care in our lives than we pay for in our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The millennials will pay $18,000 more in taxes than health care used, and the iGens will spend $27,000 more in taxes than health care used. I mean, right away, you know, the problem is there's too many of us and not enough of them.
Mm.
And they're living at home in their parents' basement. They're working two jobs with no benefits. They've got huge school debt, having got their degree. The numbers just won't add up. And to pretend they will, to somehow say, if we just wrap ourselves in the flag, the patriotic flag of the Canada Health Act, everything will be all right, it's a big lie. And that's why my number one solution out of my 10 is I say to the politicians and the civil servants and all these other special interest groups, stop lying to us. Let's tell the truth. Let's finally have the adult conversation that we've been talking about for years. And I'm trying to, you know, pull people kicking and drag them kicking and screaming out into the public forum so we can finally have that adult conversation and we can finally deal with the truth and be grown-ups.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think astonished me as I was reading your book, is because I'm 37, and I'm sure when I'm 60, the way things are going, I mean, it just seems like it'll be disastrous, and sort of the expectations I have of the healthcare system, I mean, are just ridiculous to even think about, right?
Yeah, and I make the point, like, you know, what led to the, I've been writing this book in my head for years, but I dropped dead about 4 or 5 years ago, and so while I was in the back of the ambulance, and it's actually quite funny, driving on the 401 from Coburg, where I live, to Toronto, which I've done thousands of times, this is the first time I'd done it laying down, looking out the back of a window, basically going backwards.
Mm.
It's quite a view. I said to myself, if I can actually make it to the hospital and live, I'm going to finally write this book. But here's what our healthcare system is. That maybe I can use this metaphor, and this will help people. Because people who've never used the system will say, "Oh, we have the greatest system in the world."
Sure.
Or people will say, "Well, I had a heart attack, or I was in a car crash, and no, they were great. They saved my life." And that's true because our healthcare system, which again is a sickness system, not a healthcare system, it's like you're at the Indy 500. If you've had a car crash or a heart attack or a life-threatening situation, it's like your car pulls into the pits. And you get this incredibly talented team working on you, everybody working together in harmony, and they save your life, and it's fantastic. That's our healthcare system at its best. But if you're not having a life-threatening situation, then it's like a major city where you have a snowstorm, and they plow the main roads, they plow the highways. But if you have the misfortune of living on a back street, a side street,
mm-hmm.
you probably won't see a plow for 3 or 4 days. And that is what our healthcare system is like, that if you're, you know, and really I make the point that, you know, in America they ration health care by the size of your wallet or your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Up here we do it by wait lists. And these crazy wait lists, which by the way, the solution to this is going to be driven by the boomers and zoomers. They're not going to put up with waiting 2, 3, 4 years for hips or eyes or knees or whatever it is. They will finally force government to embrace the hybrid solution. Of that I have no doubt.
Well, what's the line from the Chalula case? The
access.
Yeah.
Access to a website is not, you know, access to a wait list.
Yeah.
Is not. I mean, I mock Ontario, whose solution was, I guess, he came up with a wait list website.
Uh-huh.
If that was the solution to the problem, the idiocy that we've seen and that I expose in the book. I mean, the book is actually quite funny.
Right.
Because
right.
I tell a lot of war stories, and having been the doctor's lobbyist for years. I've been, you know, I sort of say I'm like everybody. I'm like the average Canadian, but who's been dropped into the jungle, either had the good fortune or misfortune, however you want to look at it. And so I've now come out of the jungle after 25 years as a war correspondent or the canary in a coal mine, and I'm telling you what you've seen. So there's nothing special about me, but I'm now sharing all the stuff. And, you know, I think people, the reaction people get when they read this book is, wow, I didn't know any of this. And I think it's because no one has really told the truth in such a blunt, in-your-face kind of way. I mean, I laughingly refer to myself as the Don Cherry of healthcare. and that's sort of how I made the mistake of saying that, and I showed up for my first public appearance, actually, which was in front of a bunch of University of Toronto students. And they were looking at me funny, and I said, what's wrong? He said, well, you said you're the Don Cherry of healthcare. Where's the funny suit and the high collars? I said, no, I meant attitude. I was attitude. I don't dress. Nobody could dress like Don Cherry except Don Cherry.
Yeah. The title of the book is This May Hurt a Bit, and I think that that's what also scares a lot of people, what sort of hurt is involved between getting to where we are now and where you'd like us to get. How do you allay people's fears?
Well, if you think it's going to hurt now, it's going to hurt a hell of a lot more in about 10 years from now. I sort of give the magic date as 2030.
Mm.
And, you know, we need to get serious about this now. I'll tell you what breaks my heart, because the doctors and nurses are great. They are phenomenal, and the other healthcare workers in our system. But they've done us a huge disservice, because they are the kind of people who will put up with anything and will, you know, stick their finger in every hole in the dike to try and keep the whole thing from collapsing. Had they gone ahead and let it collapse 20 years ago, which they should have, then these politicians, these slime bags, couldn't have gotten away with sort of saying, well, everything's okay, nothing to see here, you know, our system's just great. We're the best healthcare system in the world. If they'd let it collapse 20 years ago, we could have had an extra 20 years to try and fix it. So now we're in dire straits. Like, now we're the doomsday clock is ticking. And I'm cognizant of, I guess, that we just had some climate change stuff released that's saying the world is coming to an end in 12 years or 12 weeks or 12 minutes. I don't know what it is, but, you know, not to poo-poo climate change, but if we don't do something about healthcare here, we're going to really be facing trouble. Because, as I mentioned earlier, those three tsunamis—diabetes, healthcare, and dementia. You know, one of the amazing
obesity things, and dementia, right?
And, oh, sorry, obesity. Yeah. One of the amazing things, the cost of dementia is not for the healthcare; it's the lost hours and unpaid caregiving. I believe today or yesterday is National Caregivers Day. 444 million hours, I think it was in 2011, were lost to people looking after their family members with dementia. And apparently, I believe by 2030, that's going to go to 1.2 billion. Now you're thinking, well, that's not so bad. It's the world. Well, that's not the world. That's Canada. That's just Canada. Okay, so you begin to see the kind of incredible accounting problem we have here. I mean, forget about all the arguments of health care and pharmacare and what should be covered and what shouldn't. We have a math problem of historic proportion here. And so long as we run around and pretend, keep our heads in the sand and say, no, we don't have a problem, everything's fine, nothing to see here, then one day it's just going to all collapse on us. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm amazed at how many doctors and nurses are thrown in the towel and quitting and retiring and walking away.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just had enough now, and you know, physician suicide and burnout, all that stuff, it's at an all-time high. And it's not surprising, because, you know, it is depressing to read this book. I mean, obviously, I've tried to make it entertaining and funny. In fact, I'm not a journalist. I often joke about it. I wish somebody would hire me to teach journalism so I could learn how to do it right alongside the kids, because everybody thinks I'm cool because I break all the rules. What they don't realize is I don't know what the rules are that I'm breaking. But I've always loved those novels where somebody walks into a bar and starts telling a stranger their life story. So in this case, it's not a bar I'm walking into, but I do use the metaphor of we go for a walk in the forest on this journey that I reference throughout the book. And instead of my story, I'm telling really the story of Medicare and healthcare in Canada. But I do illustrate it with a lot of situations with my family, my own health problem.
Uh-huh.
Again, not because my family or myself there's anything unique about us, but because we're just like everyone else. So what you're reading could have been written by any Canadian.
Yeah. What frustrates me as I'm reading the book is the lack of political will throughout the country in terms of getting something changed, getting something new. But have you seen anything new? Have you seen anything innovative? Where are you optimistic in terms of certain politicians and certain policy prescriptions that they might have?
Well, here's what it will come down to. The polling I've seen, both internal and external, suggests that 75% of Canadians want choice and would be on side with a hybrid solution. One of these days, some politician, some leader is going to figure out, hey, I could win the next election if I came out and told the truth and said, we need to do this because of this, instead of coming out and playing the pretend game that they always play.
Mm.
So, you know, in in my case, what will drive this, I think, and this is why I'm calling for a healthcare revolution. In fact, I've even termed the phrase, we need a healthcare Arab Spring in Canada. So I'm hoping that my fellow Canadians will read the book, whether you buy it or whether you go to a library. It's easy enough to find these things online in Chapters, Indigos, in libraries. I'm heartened by how many holds. There's four or five copies in every library, and there's about 20 holds. So people want to read this, and I feel really good about that. But bottom line is, read it, and then quiz your candidates as they come to the door. You know, if someone says, well, I'm in favor of the Canada Health Act, or I'm in favor of the status quo, or I'm against two-tier, you need to get on them, because what they're basically saying is, I'm going to do nothing and let the thing collapse. Now, you know, asking me, do I feel any kind of optimism? Well, certainly, you know, in my job as lobbyist over the years, when I've had dinner and drinks with politicians, they all admit the truth. They know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They know that what I'm saying here is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But they won't, for the most part, have the guts to stand up and say so, because, and we have this, I go into some detail in the book, touching the third rail, that if you say we need to do this, it's the third rail of Canadian politics. But I say we should look at this very differently, that just as the train needs to touch the third rail in order to operate at peak efficiency, we need to touch the third rail and embrace the hybrid solution in order for our healthcare system to operate at peak efficiency. So instead of being afraid of touching the third rail, we should be embracing touching the third rail, at least when it comes to healthcare, and actually do this and come out and show some leadership. So the great problem today, and I talk about this in the book as well, today's leaders lead from the middle. They say they have this crazy idea, because basically nobody does anything about polling and seeing what the public thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we end up with leaders who lead from the middle. Well, that's not leading, that's following. Okay, right now, the patients and people like me and other advocates and Dr. Day, we're the ones leading. It's not the politicians. So we need the politicians to show some guts and not be so spineless and actually get to the front of the line and lead from the front, which is like real leading, which is what real leaders used to do. And today's crop is pretty disappointing, because they're certainly not leading from the front, that's for sure.
And there's nobody in this country that would say lead, that you could see leading from the front? Say in Ontario, for example. Is there anyone there?
Well, let me give you an example. And this comes down to the real problem, which is the political problem. So Doug Ford and his gang, okay, we want to end hallway health care. We brought in my good friend, Dr. Reuben Devlin, who's a great, great man. He's going to be our health care czar. That's great. Christine Elliott's the health minister. All fantastic stuff, good stuff, good stuff. So they're bringing forth an omnibus bill, which is going to do a series of things and create a super agency and bring about 14 things together, amalgamate and get rid of the local health initiative bunch, which are frankly a place for liberal hacks. These are great, but here's where you're solving the political problem and not the real problem, again, to get back to Minbassador and Simplexity.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to throw money at hospitals to end hallway health care, and the idea is the hospitals get to open more beds, okay? The alternative level, I hate that bed blocker term, alternative level of care is actually the term we should be using. For people that are plugging up emergency rooms when they should be somewhere else, basically in a nursing home, et cetera. We don't have enough beds. Now, solving the political problem, you throw money, open beds in the hospital, I've solved the problem. Well, you've solved the political problem, not the problem. Because here's what one study showed. 9% of the so-called bed blockers were doing, and this was in kind of the Hamilton region west of Toronto,
mm-hmm.
were doing 40% of the bed blocking. And they discovered that those patients were obese or had dementia, we're on antipsychotic drugs, whatever it might be. And so we have not enough facilities that can deal with dementia. We don't have the machinery for the personal support workers to lift the obese patients and move them around. And, of course, what happens to personal support workers? They blow out their back and knees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. So we're not. Those are the problems we should be fixing. But the way you fix them is put money, and that's one of my solutions here, invest heavily in long-term care. And so we need the right facilities and lots of beds, and that's how you actually fix hallway health care, if you're solving the real problem. So I say, just as Mike Harris didn't go far enough in 1996 when he brought in the Savings and Restructuring Act, Doug Ford hasn't gone far enough here. Here was his chance in this bill to embrace medical tourism, to embrace a hybrid solution, and do all kinds of things. So we'll see whether that happens and whether Andrew Scheer, for example, if he ends up being prime minister, will he do that? Or will Maxime Bernier, I don't see him becoming the prime minister anytime soon, but hopefully someone, probably from the right side of the political spectrum, will be leading the charge here.
This is Stephen, and been interesting to talk, and it's an interesting book. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Oh, my great pleasure.
The book is called This May Hurt a Bit, Reinventing Canada's Healthcare System. Its foreword is by Dr. Brian Day. It is published by Dundurn. Its author, Stephen Skivington, joined me on the line from Cobourg, Ontario, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.